test.
Freezer bag, yeah. But gallon size. But I always wrap them in. And sometimes I get the sandwich bags and put them inside. Mm. This one. You know, the big sandwich storage bags.
Oh. But why the paper towel? Why the.
Well, it has bones. And they punch a hole.
Oh, okay.
Is that bag big enough, Betty? Then?
Yeah.
They're all right, aren't they?
Yeah.
Gee, I hate to cut that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why aren't they putting the water inside? What is that? It keeps them fresh from Lockerbie. Boy, those are beautiful. I just cut one up. I usually put fish away for Father. I jar, yeah, for every reason. He's not here, but I'll still do it.
Oh, Betty, thank you. We've got another father now. There,
oh,
I think,
yeah.
I did get him. There he is.
Okay, I check it to see if it leaks, you know. Maybe you could just kind of hold this like this till it freezes.
Uh-huh.
Or put a tape on it or something.
I'll tape it.
That's interesting.
It's exactly the way we do it. We put it in water like that, just exactly the same.
Yeah.
Where you do that?
I've seen one idea where you fish it like that and you coat it with mayonnaise and something else mixed with it. Mayonnaise.
Oh.
And you then you grill it.
Yeah.
The only thing about that is it's got a lot of oil in it.
It's just greasy. That's the greasiest fish on the Yukon. You want to get fried for your lunch?
Oh, we don't really have any place to do it. I mean, they won't let us cook in the lodge.
They won't?
I don't think so. Big sign, no. Only employees beyond this point.
We'll have, what's her name do it for you?
Cheryl?
Sure, she'll do it.
I guess we could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, she'll do it.
Luke is out fishing anyway. You don't know.
That's my brother.
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, the fish we had last night was delicious.
You had some last night?
I noticed it was oily.
Oh, it was really oily.
Yeah.
I'll cut you into pieces and you can just fry it real fast for lunch.
Thanks very much.
Oh,
that would
be wonderful.
Did I get that going straight? I would send you some fish.
I think it would be hard for us to travel with.
Yeah.
But wow, this looks so beautiful.
Yes, this look good.
Okay, I'll take my pail maybe back with me. I'll just put hers in there.
Did you have that kind, Betty?
I'm just gonna take my pail back with me.
Oh, great. That's great. I'm glad to have my lesson. Won't you stop for
coffee? You don't have to do it. Do you have
chocolate chips, Betty?
No.
I'm in a hurry.
You're in a hurry. She's always in a hurry.
Yeah.
Do you want to try doing
the the salmon have come now, huh?
Do you want to try doing the call?
Up here?
Maybe another minute or two.
So they really arrived. Betty, have they all come?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Are they down in fish camp?
We got hung up on a snag up there.
Hmm.
Did you ever get your net unsnagged?
Jim just went out this morning and got it unsnagged, but we were lucky it didn't tear. I'll get that fish ready and I'll ask Sherry if she cook it for you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Betty.
You don't have to put that fish right away, sister.
No, I know, but I want to cover it.
Oh.
I'm going to cover it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is absolutely beautiful, isn't it?
It is.
She said she'd take me out fishing one day, too.
Have you ever been fishing?
Not this kind of fishing.
No. It's really exciting.
Ah! Let me get this baby in the freezer. We have a bigger freezer, too, but I'm going to put it in right now and we can start freezing.
Say hello.
Sure.
if they're open because of lunchtime, but yeah, let's check.
You people go ahead, we'll be
fine. Okay. Well, this afternoon we are.
Wow. Okay, I think you, Mary, had a call this morning.
Yeah.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she got it.
Okay.
I think it was a radio station.
Oh, okay.
Thanks a lot. Well, let's see if I've got this thing on. Oh, you bet I do.
A fish wheel, see? Which is, it's the easiest way to get fish, and you can get a variety of fish at the same time. If you want the kings or the chinook, or you want the chums, you get both. Well, this type of fishing we're doing now, due to there's not too many set net sites, they're all taken up. So at least the rest of us, we have to drift, see. It's all right, but there was a better way we had, you know, before. It's a young man's world out here, don't I? You know, I'd never forget that. And that's why I, well, I don't disagree with that type. Well, what else are you going to do? You ain't got much choice, you know. You do the best you can. And it's okay, but the type of gear we're using for drifting is for Chinook salmon, and you occasionally snag a chum in there if he's big enough to get into the mesh and stay there. And back in a... This is all history, you know. My dad and the old-timers, it's regrettable you folks never got to meet those real old-timers, you know, because they could really, they lived up here all their life like I'm doing, but what I'm really saying is that they could bring you way back on fisheries and game, you name it.
But you were talking about fish wheels a minute ago.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, for years the old-timers used it previous to that. And it's the easiest way to get, the cheapest way too. It don't cost you nothing. If you take care of your wheel, it'll last you 5 years. You get the right type of chicken wire that doesn't break too easy from... Well, the salmon, if you ever watch a fish wheel, when that basket comes up, like a chinook or a hay, there's 40, 50 pounds of fish that's pounding in that basket, you know. And it don't take long for him to make a hole with his tail. Not the one fish, but maybe it might last a couple of days, even with a heavy run of dogs. But if we could get the right type of wire that they used to have,
like I say, it lasts 5 years. And there's no expense once you make it. You just go out and get some logs and build your raft and get the poles. In April, we used to get those little, small spruce poles. Oh, maybe at the butt would be about 3 inches across and then tapering up, whatever. Those were poles we got to make the baskets and peel it and dry them all spring, you know. So they're still half green when you build the wheel, but if you didn't drive those poles out previously, that wheel would be so heavy, it would take more paddles to turn that wheel. And if you didn't have high water, even average stage of water, you'd have to add on more buckets to turn the excess weight you have to. The lighter, the better, you know. And they were adjustable too. By that I mean you could, we have a shaft, they call the shaft part of the fish wheel. You could lower, higher and lower that thing any depth you want. Fish wheels were dipping, 10 feet on the average. It all depends on where you got your wheel set. If it's deep water, well, that the fish, they like to swim where the gravel spots are, for some reason or other. And the old timers said they like to, salmon don't swim like whitefish and what they call slush or lingcod. They like mud, you know. Not the whitefish, he likes gravel too. But the old timer's theory on that was, you know, it's not long before some of them spawn and they say they like to rub their stomachs on the gravel as they go along to the spawning ground. Maybe that's not so, but we were told that. And in 1932, 1933, somewhere in there, my dad had a wheel, that's all they used. They never had fish nets them days. They had maybe for whitefish. Salmon was all taken by a fish wheel. The family put up 20,000 chum salmon that one season. 20,000. There was never a shortage of salmon.
How did they put them up?
The process, we split them and smoked them and dried them for dogs. That was the dog food supply. And what we had excess of, it went for sale at 5 cents a pound. Them days. So we put up 20,000 fish, and that fish wheel, just the one wheel, it ran about a third of the time. We'd have to stop. I've seen as high in one basket 13 salmon. Coming up in that one basket, that thick, you know. Well, when you get 13 in there, you gotta have pretty good current, or add more paddles to get that weight over the break and, you know, down the chute into the box. That is a great invention, and I keep repeating that. It an investment that you take care of, it lasts you 5 years, those days, we used a few spikes and maybe a little wire, baling wire, which they used to strap on boxes them days, and you never throw those away. And back in the early 30s and up to the 40s, you could build a good wheel for about, it might cost you $50, you know. Whereas now, with the type of net we're using to catch these Chinook salmon, that you're talking $1,000 worth of net, see?
Every year?
No, every 2 years.
Oh,
if you're lucky. When you're drifting, you can snag and lose the whole net, see? It's happening out here today. Happened last night. Every year someone loses his net. You get to scraping the bottom where the salmon are and you're bound, you know, you can't see down there. So,
What about a boat? What does a boat cost to,
Well, to go out here now, you're looking at the boat and motor and an investment to have something that's gonna, you know, kind of profitable or even subsistently. You're looking at $4,000 with a boat and net and outboard motor. Yeah.
How often would you have to replace the outboard?
Well, that's a good question. Outboards they make nowadays, they don't use points anymore. They have a power pack, which could go out at, after a length of time, could just burn out, and there ain't a thing you can do about it but replace it. And you're talking maybe $200. Oh,
what's
flight number
insurance?
Huh?
That's
Charlie.
An airplane flight number.
Oh,
you're
folks,
huh?
Well, no, it's
Sierra, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just confused here. Here's a receipt. I flew the 19th of April and I've been requesting it for the record and I finally got it. That's been our lifestyle with the fish wheel, you know, and a way of life we knew, which was great. They started to, back in the late teens or early 20s, there were several plants built on the mouth of the river, and they used, they practically shut the mouth off, and so there was no more fish up this way. And my dad and the rest of the old-timers petitioned, it was still a territory, I forget who was down there in Juneau. Anyhow, the whole river put a petition in and they closed those processing plants off on the mouth of the river. Now we're faced with the same problem up here with not only interception on the mouth of the river, but through Falls Pass over in the peninsula area, Unimak Pass, intercept the salmon. But if they fish and game can, fishery board can control that somewhere, they'll have to, otherwise we will be running out of salmon, no salmon coming to the spawning grounds. Plus the fact we still have to come to terms with Canada one of these days. They own 50% of the Chinook spawning grounds and they want their equity.
What I notice as we talk that you're sewing burlap.
Yeah.
What's that for?
Well, that's to the type of boats we're using now. The old wood boat wasn't too bad. It was not too much of a problem like the iron boats we have, although we still have plywood parts of the floor. This burlap I'm putting together here is to lay on the, in the boat so to support your traction when you pull this net into the boat, crossways of the boat, and you're taking him out of the net, the slime gets all in the bottom of the boat and it's a hazard, it's dangerous. You can slip so easy on that stuff and go overboard. If not go overboard, you can injure yourself on the side of the boat. So I'm putting this burlap together to, the net comes on top of this burlap. Burlap points in the boat, see, and the fish land on this burlap. And when you walk around the fish or anywhere around the net, you never spread the net out far enough so you crowd yourself out of a space to walk. And this, you get the net in there and it pins this burlap down, it don't move, and it's porous enough where you have good traction. Mm-hmm. Also, when we get ashore, they'll take this out of the bottom of the boat and give it a good rinse in the river. It's easy to wash, you know, it's not tight, see? The mesh, then you take this and wet it down good and throw that over the fish that you are going to cut later on. And it helps keep them cool, especially at night. And there is, it's porous enough for there's escapement. If there's any heat in the fish, that'll come out, and not the canvas, anything tight over them with no areas, it gives no chance for the fish to cool off. If he's been laying in the boat for a couple hours before you put a cover over him, it gets hot inside, see? So when they could get through, like pull into the smokehouse or the landing area where we're going to cut the fish, they wet this down good, and we have buckets of water handy in the smokehouse. Oh, about every hour or so you go along and throw water on top of this burlap, and the cold ground underneath plus the cold burlap on top, and they'll keep for 10 hours anyway. Not but, more.
You were talking about the old days and the fish wheels. Right now, as we talk in Holy Cross, the people are out catching king salmon, which are running now. What's the extent of the catch by the people for subsistence now for the king salmon?
Well, you mean how much we is required?
Well, how much are you getting?
Now?
Yeah.
Well, the fishing just started, but from reports from downriver, we should have an average year. Who knows, really? Fish and Game can't tell you, really. they monitor what they can, but Bob, I got a little bit mixed up there. What you said again?
Is it what you're trying to say? How much of people's food comes from subsistence?
Well,
is that what you're asking?
You were talking about the old days. What about fishing nowadays? The people have their nets. They get a certain amount for subsistence, and some of them are also in the commercial fishery, I take it.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the amount that's being caught,
yeah,
and what was caught previously?
Yeah.
Well, they, in this, the Fishing Game Board broke these areas down, like they have Y1 area and Y2 area, and we're in Y3 here, and then from about 40 miles or so above here, then you get into Y4 and so on up the river, the Galena area. For commercial fishing, that's outlawed in Y3 and on down. You have to use the gill net. But you can use a wheel for subsistence fishing. And we broke it down, just subsistence or you know, like subsistence consumption, I'd say, of how much we need. We broke it down about 30% of diet. Providing you get the fish, you know, it's just kind of, you never know.
What about hunting in this community? What are people What species are they hunting? Moose?
For our meat supply, that's all we have. It's the moose. Fortunately, we still have a good, healthy population, but where the moose are in this, we have a controlled use area. It's subject to floods too, so you never can really, no one can say what it'll be like next year. And from past history, like the rabbits and the caribou, every animal runs a cycle. And from looking back, no records, but from what the old timers say, that it's getting about that time that the moose would have a cycle and could phase out the same as the caribou and the rabbits. And if that happens, we're in trouble. We have no other source of meat. The closest caribou herd that's trying to get established, they're coming down a little further and further from up the Inoko down to this area across there. We don't want to intercept that if we can, because what's going to happen as time goes by, those caribou will get down in this area again. And make it their little domain or whatever, their grazing and whatever is there for them to. And once they've found in an area, that takes care of that. They don't leave the area. They always come back, the calves, to where they were born. The same as the fish. But that's really complicated either way you look at our meat supply here, because when the land's been all conveyed and surveyed no trespassing signs put up, and that's what bothers us, because that's not the answer what where we are today.
Yes, what about the percentage of the diet of the people here, the meat and the fish, moose and salmon and subsistence game and fish, what percentage of diet would it be altogether, do you think?
The meat part?
Yeah.
Well, that's right, as right now, as of, you know, this date and time, I say, it's pretty hard to, not hard, but you can't be accurate like we used to be. What I'm saying is, years ago, you just had a caribou, a reindeer diet, and fish, period. The younger generation today are going for, well, some people call it junk food. They like that, and I see nothing wrong with it if that's what they like. So the ones that are really subsistence living is the ones we're referring to, because we can't, you know, if the young folks want to live that way, that's fine with them, you know. We have not. It's meat source, we're talking about percentage. When the meat is available, a lot of the young folks I notice, even in my own family, and myself too, we're pretty much on a meat diet. If it's available and they can afford to buy it, which is outrageous here, the price, they can't without jobs. I'd say about for the middle-aged and younger people, there'd be 80% diet of meat. And for we elders, 70 maybe.
How much of the meat is meat that people take from the land, as opposed to store-bought meat?
Oh, they can't afford to buy it, so there's no hardly any. They're forced to buy it now. We still have to take 70%. Yeah. They got the meat, but who can afford to buy it? Yeah. And what?
The imported meat.
Yeah,
the imported meat. We have restrictions. We're restricted to hunting seasons, you know. And that's making it hard on the village because I think what we're looking at and considering now, some of the elders, and we have talked with the personnel of the fishing game, but you know, they just have a job. The decisions are made in Juneau. We like to see more local control of, if there's families here in this village or any of these villages, these four villages I'm referring to, kids that are trying to grow up, how are you going to have healthy kids when you can't get the food for them? The fish and the moose meat, and it's pretty much our diet, up north, they got to have their whale. Mm-hmm. Same thing, you know, it's our regular diet for the elders and the middle age. And it's really a problem. Some went out and got arrested when they had nothing to eat. They were just scrounging for the next meal. I lived through that area, that period of time too. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to leave your family hungry when there's a big healthy moose running by and somebody else tell you what you can eat and can't eat? When do you eat that meat? We have freezers, but you are allowed, hunting season. And if you're not, you're miss out on that due to various reasons, or the weather, or you're physically not fit to go out and get that moose, that's your tough luck. So if we thought that if we could come up with some compromise, we're willing to compromise. If we could get more local control, by that I mean is if we see, there's people that live in these villages know what's going on, sure. The fish and game have no way of telling, they make an effort, but they're not getting full cooperation. Naturally, they wouldn't. So, with local control, if we seen that there was a dire need of meat, we'd be able to go out and take no more than that's needed and give it to the family that's needed, and the rest, the others that don't need it, they couldn't expect to have any. That would be one way of taking care of that, but I keep repeating over and over. As time goes by, with settlements and, hardly any development, but settlement is going to bother us. What little resource we have.
You mean settlement by non-natives?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By non-natives. What little resources we have now is just enough to take care of our needs.
When you talk about local control, so that the local people in the village would have some say about when you can take game and fish, what kind of local control do you have in mind? Any?
It would what we thought would go to the IRA council or the city council, and they would regulate with the support of the public. We have to support one another. We're not going to put someone on the limb, you know what I mean, and drop him there. We have to hang in there. I'm a native myself, you know, and that was practiced for hundreds of years. They never took more than they needed, but it's getting out of hand now sometimes in this area, you know. The younger people don't seem to, some of them, they don't seem to appreciate the value of what we have to conserve. It has to be an effort of everyone, because it affects everyone in the area. And if we go on the way with these regulations we have and abuse those regulations, and it'll have a tremendous effect on our controlled use area. We had a heck of a time to get that. It took half the Yukon support for us to get this controlled use area. But we're afraid of it. We know what's going to happen. The big game guys is going to, they're running out of trophy moose in many areas. We still have a few. They can contest this controlled use area any time. And with more violations we have going on, we stand a good chance to lose it. It's to that point now. So hopefully what has to take place now in these villages is some way to get across to the our young future generations the value of the land, the resources we have now, and try to be conservative with planning and local control. Because this is a bad attitude to have, but it's brought on us too. Our problems are brought out to us. Like, they make the decisions in Juneau and the Fish and Game Board of open and closure periods, but they're coming around the last couple of years. They have these so-called advisory boards along the Yukon. I'm a member here. We're getting together more and more. And I like that. You can't fight one another. You just gotta come and sit down, and if we're wrong, we're wrong, and if they can compromise, we'll work with them. We know you don't get nowhere banging heads, you know that. We gotta sit down and talk. And we get along pretty well with the Fish and Game personnel, the state. But if it ever went to local, if it ever went to federal control, they don't talk to we guys. They take a position and say, hey guys, here it is. But we can sit down and talk with the fisheries board now and the representatives of game wardens and stuff. They want to, once we get our views across and they have a job to do, they're willing to, you know, to do their part. It's, you know, I'm talking about people that were really needed to meet this spring, before the geese came in and ducks. So we had a meeting with the fish and game personnel here, three of them, and one of them is a friend of mine, personal friend. We got talking about this meat source, and he said, we'll do all we can to get you guys some meat here as soon as possible. Well, he was referring to illegal kills and stuff that been killed along the highway, and they butchered it. It's good, there's nothing wrong with it. They brought us one moose, which we appreciate, you know, but that's still not enough to take care of a village like this. One little moose, everybody maybe got 10 pounds, enough for a meal or two, and was gone. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it, but that's not taking care of the need, see?
About 250 people in the village here in Holy Cross, I believe.
Average, yeah, they come and go. Yeah, like I mentioned yesterday, the enrollment here is around 400, but they're in Kodiak Fair, you name it, Anchorage, Fairbanks, there. But the average population is around 250 all the time here. So you can see how much meat we need, you know.
Well, I sure appreciate your taking the time to talk to us again, Mr. Walker. I'll just say for the record that at Mr. Walker's invitation, the commission has met at his home here in Holy Cross, and he's been good enough to tell us about the tradition of subsistence here in Holy Cross. We're supposed to go and get that plane, Jim. 3 o'clock.
You got transportation?
Well, we'll walk out to the airport. Our plane comes at 3, and they're taking our bags out.
Well, I want to thank you folks for coming, and it's an honor for you to call on me.
Well, I
appreciate it deeply. It'll be one of my memories.
Well, it'll be one of mine too, sir. Thank you.
Because you appreciate taking my word for what I say. You trust me. And I like that. I would not advise you otherwise. No way. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. For you guys, you know that.
Oh, I hope you have.
Excuse my expression, you guys. You gentlemen and these ladies. You know, I get used to talk.
Yeah. Well, bye, Mrs. Walker.
Yeah, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot for having us. I'm sorry we took your TV show.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I've got some of that silver here, too.
Yeah. I don't mind, but ain't much you can do about it.
Well, I saw a Canadian picture.
How is that? I'll just show
you. I'm still getting my...
We're getting you all straightened out here.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Should I take one more?
Just in case. A couple of good-looking fellas here. A couple of good-looking guys.
Well, a couple of has-been right here. I mean, one has-been. Take care of you folks, if I get to town, I'll try to...
Sure, give
us a call. I'll drop by the office there.
Good,
I got
to...
I was there with Mary, you know, early this spring.
Good.
Yeah, I know where it is.
Well, good seeing you again.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Good luck fishing.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
Did I have my coat there? No.
I
wouldn't have brought my coat. But what was